完璧などありえない。この世界は不完全だから、美しい。
もうバカバカバカ。
なに、
俺は海賊王になる。
待って、なんと美味しさなの。
力を渡した時に言ったことを覚えているかい。
クエ、違う、そこじゃない。
変態遅い。
Hello and welcome to More Than Hentai, a podcast that is here to show that anime is far more than just tentacles and cat girls. There's also countless stories of love, loss, laughs, hope, horror, and happiness that are just dying to be found. And I, Brenda White, the Salt Pepper Senpai, am here to help you find them. More Than Hentai is proudly powered by Audio Technica and Dashwater, so please go upgrade your audio and hydration games today, preferably after you listen to this absolute humper of an episode we've got coming your way. And joining me in the Sugoi studio is not only a friend of the podcast, but also a dear friend of mine. He's a cat dad who cooks up a storm both in real life and over on twitch.tv. He can be found all over the internet sharing his love of pop culture and helping build fantastic communities while spreading the good, good word of Chainsaw Man. Should I also mention that he has fantastic taste when it comes to anime, citing Bleach, Dandadan, Neon Genesis, Chainsaw Man, Rascal Does Not Dream, Jujutsu Kaisen, Maka-in, Too Many Losing Heroines, and Ghost in the Shell as some of his personal favorites. You can find him on the socials at Onigiri Daddy. That's O-N-I-G-I-R-I-D-A-D-D-Y. Oni, you bloody legend. Welcome to the studio. How might you be doing?
Good, man. How are you?
I am doing very, very well. I haven't been this excited to record a podcast in quite some time, and I haven't been this excited to talk about a particular anime in quite some time, because I adore this title we're going to be talking about in a little while's time. But I'm also excited because this is your first ever time getting on the microphone to record a podcast. So welcome. Hopefully it's a great experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really keen. Like the anime we're talking about today is like been one of my favorites of the season so far, if not probably my favorite of the season. It's got everything. And then, you know, I've been watching hentai, the show, not
I was about to say, you better work on the phrasing there, man. Like, no judgments around here. We don't yuck nobody's yums, but like,
no, I've been I've been listening to hentai since you know, very, very early on. Like I caught Jujutsu Kaisen, I think the week it came out, and then you know, I've said to you personally, like I've gone through and I've watched the ones that I knew, and then as I've gotten more into Sakura Society and watching your content as a whole, I was really into like going back and just watching everything else that I missed that I may not have watched before.
Did you discover a few anime off the back of that where you're like, man, I'm going to go check this out, and then you go check it out and you're like, oh, this is now becoming one of my favorites?
I don't think so, but there has been personal recommendations from yourself that like just through Sakura Society Discord and just like communicating with you on a whole, that I'm like now sits at like some of my favorite content of all time, not just anime, but you know, everything in between.
I love seeing Maka-in, Too Many Losing Heroines get a shout as far as some of your favorites, because like obviously the manga's been going for a little while, a couple of years now, but the anime only debuted at the back end of 2024. I adored it. It was my favorite of the season at time. And yeah, I love seeing other people embrace this fantastic little high school romance dramedy that just hits on all levels.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like with Maka-in, like it was really something that I picked up at the start of that season because it was on yours and Courtney's lists. And I was like, yeah, sweet. This is great. But then I think it just got swallowed by like life and just being busy in general. And then I think I commented in the Discord, I was like, hey, like I have this anime in my head and I don't know what it's called, but they have like blue and yellow ties and there's like four ties on their school uniform. And luckily I got pointed in the right direction by everyone. So, and I went back and I watched it all, and I think I chewed through it in like an evening.
It's so good. I do question the amount of ties that are needed on those school uniforms, but outside of that, like it is perfect. I love that we've got a second season on the way. This past weekend I went to Minotaur and copped a heap of new manga, and I've actually started collecting the physicals of Maka-in. So I picked up the first four of those while I was there too. So I'm excited to sort of go back and read it in its static form, as well as continue to watch when season two comes out in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a physical grab for me as well. just I don't know if my desk can handle any more manga until I buy a bookshelf. So
that's the first world problems that us reading fans constantly have to deal with. Like my current bookshelf is now full, so I need to buy a second one. But then I'm like, where do I put it? I'll have to change the layout of my room. I'm not happy with this. So I'm sort of just frozen, and I'm just going to start stacking manga around the room, like almost like an episode of Hoarders, until I understand what to buy next and where to put it.
Yeah, that's kind of what my desk looks like. I think I've sent you a photo previously. Yeah, but it's
impressive.
I think that there's actually a third stack starting now, and it's not just.
It's not, I love that.
Every time I have excess money, we're like either down at Kinokuniya or down at QBD, and we're grabbing books. So it's.
I miss, like, Kinokuniya is one of my favorite places in Sydney. I miss being able to go to that store because I was there every couple of weekends, and even just getting a little tasty treat from like a little Black Star pastry that's in there as well, and flicking through some pages, eating some cake and some coffee. Like, it was quite the little ritual for me. And like, yeah, great bookstores here in Melbourne, don't get me wrong, but yeah, Kinokuniya is just one of the goats.
Yeah, definitely. It's special.
Something else is special, I got to say. Like when we're sort of queuing up to get this podcast going, obviously I send a bit of a Q&A sort of qualifier to the guests just to get a bit of an understanding, get some more backstory and context as far as, you know, favorite anime, how they got into it and whatnot. And I think your opening line in one of the responses is fantastic. And I really want to sort of segue that into how your anime journey began, because you said anime has been in my life before I knew what anime was. So I love that, and I want to hear more about that right now and get an understanding of when anime, this mysterious cartoon back then for you, sort of made its presence known, and you know, how you stumbled across this fantastic medium.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I started with anime before understanding what it really was. Like, it was cartoons. Like, I was a kid, there were cartoons. They were really cool cartoons, and I, you know. But I think with watching like sort of like early Australian TV, early in the Saturday mornings, you know, you had like Toaster TV or Cheese TV or whatever it was, wherever you're local. And even like Cartoon Network was giving me like Dragon Ball Z and Naruto like very early on. And then even like SBS, I remember staying up late. I had this old silver CRT TV that I would like put a blanket over so my mum couldn't see the reflection under the door. And I would watch like Neon Genesis Evangelion and like and Ghost in the Shell and like whatever would be running after like South Park because, you know, I'd watch Mythbusters and then mum would be like, all right, TV off, go to bed. And then I would like, yeah, mum, sure. And then like half an hour later, I would like put my blanket over the CRT and turn it back on and watch South Park and then some anime.
That's so good. That's so good. And you know what? Kids these days would not know of the pain and the desperation of trying to tune in some of those channels back on the old CRT analog television sort of eras. And,
oh, yeah, you'd knock the bunny ears with your blanket and you'd be like, crap, no.
And even just the sheer weight of moving some of these TVs. Like, I remember, like, I'd try and reposition it or like, shift the angle when I was in bed to when maybe I was playing video games on the TV at home. And it was like, you know, it was huge. It was like a 58 centimeter TV, so you're like, yeah, I'm a baller, but it weighed about 1,000 kilos.
You know, now you can just get a like a 14 centimeter long iPad and just put it near your face and watch anime. It's great.
Yeah, I was in JB Hi-Fi today and I was looking at a 100-inch television. I'm like, you know, like, and that's, I guess that's becoming a bit more of the norm, but even then I'm like, when is it going to end? It's never going to end, is it, Oni?
No. I think, like, especially with like the realm of like projectors, and especially with the like the high luminosity projectors that like produce really good pictures even in daylight, it's people just getting bigger and bigger TVs until eventually everyone's going to have a home cinema.
Yeah, that's the dream right there, my friend. That's the dream. So okay, so you stealthily were watching some of the more mature adult themed anime doing the rounds on, you know, SBS on a Friday night or a Saturday night. Where was the journey from there? Like, how did it take you from that point on the CRT to now on the, you know, television, laptop, iPad, etc.?
Yeah, it certainly started with Bleach. I remember I was talking about Naruto at school because I thought Naruto was like really good. And then my mate was like, nah, Naruto's trash, watch Bleach. And I was like, okay, like, where do I watch it? So he gave me, back in the day, you would have places like Bleach Watch or Saiyan Watch or, you know, all these sites that no longer exist because we have, streaming services that provide that now. And I went and I watched all of Bleach, and I was like, man, this is really cool. And I was talking to my mate, and he's like, yeah, it's anime. And I was like, anime? Like, I've heard it before, but that's cool. Like,
it's so good. And on the, like, you mentioned a couple of the Mount Rushmores, right? The big threes. Like, you mentioned you were chewing on Bleach, watching a bit of Dragon Ball, a bit of Naruto. Noticeably absent was One Piece, which, you know, I'm not sad about at all. But what would you say as far as if we sort of bundled those four big God-tier-esque titles together, how would you rank that? Like, where would you put number one? Like, maybe you don't have to give us the entirety of the four, but... Oh, it's all right. I'll be dragging with you. It's
Bleach,
okay.
Bleach is up there, especially after Thousand Year Blood War. I am a ride or die Ichigo fan, man. Like, I've never owned a sword, and the closest I've ever been was a metal replica of Zangetsu, and I was like, oof.
Yes. Yes. I love that. I'm with you. Like, Bleach is at the top of the pops if we're talking those four wholly and solely. I haven't watched enough Naruto and probably Dragon Ball to appropriately probably place them. So I guess I'd maybe chuck them at 3 and 4 just because it's sort of a mulligan for me. Because, yeah, like I said, I haven't watched any Naruto or Dragon Ball since watching it on Cheese TV in like the late 90s. One Piece, I respect it for what it is. I fell away with it after Skypiea. I will go back when we get the Witch Studio remake. I'm hearing it's doing a lot of great things with the most recent arcs and episodes, but I guess I have to put that on in number two for me because it's the only thing I've watched substantially apart from Bleach in that list of four.
Yeah, you see, it's if we're doing a tier system, it's definitely like Bleach, Naruto, Dragon Ball, then One Piece for me. I only ever got to Inner Slobby, so that's, you know, not too far at all in the grand scheme of things.
That's fair, and like I said, there's no right or wrong answers here. We're not yucking anybody's yums. So, yeah, keep the dragging at a minimal, internet, because I am pretty well in lockstep there with Oni. So, excuse me. So, from that point, obviously, we're starting to sort of graduate into more of, you know, current gen, or if you wanted to say, you know, the last decade or so. You mentioned some of your favorites there, where it is mixing some of the old and the new, where you mentioned Neon Genesis, you mentioned Bleach. But then are other couple of recent hitters outside of Maka Ian, like Dandadan's on your list, which warms my heart very much. Oh, so man. Rascal Does Not Dream warms my heart very much.
That was a Brendan recommendation. That was straight up. I can't remember where you mentioned it, but I think I DM'd you about it. I was like, is this any good? And you're like, dude, just watch it. Like, it's good.
It's so special. And like, we were talking about Rascal offline, and looking at the key art, it is very misleading, and I think it gives the wrong impression to a lot of casual fans, where they just go, oh, it's just going to be some fan servicey bunny girl thing with no depth. But then you watch it.
It's like
and
the first
episode.
It's got
so much depth. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you don't really see her in the bunny outfit outside of that for sort of the here into the future. Like, it's so good, and it's so special.
As far as like bunny outfits go for anime as well, it's tame. Like, it's like, you know, beach episodes are worse than that.
Yeah, yeah. There's far hornier stuff out on the daily, on the weekly, from some of the bigger heavy hitters out there. So, yeah, if you're looking for some really nice, grounded, romantic drama with some supernatural and sciencey-based elements, like, you cannot find better than the Rascal franchise. And the fact that we've got like a new season airing currently at the moment, like, we talked about it offline, like, minor spoiler, but like, the studio that's sort of chairing the anime in question we're going to be diving deep on in a second has three current romantic related animes airing in this season alone. Like, it's bonkers.
And they're not just like any romance anime. They are like heavy hitters in the current sort of scheme of things. Like, you know, Cloverworks is doing the other one that's not the one in question is My Dress Up Darling, which even my fiance, who is, you know, a very casual sort of anime fan, has gotten into and adores.
That makes me very happy because, yeah, My Dress Up Darling's a big personal favorite of mine. Maren Kitagawa is one of my favorite anime characters, manga characters out there. She's so great. And her and Gojo together is just adorable. I'm sad that the story has been sort of rushed to an end, it feels like, for me. But, like, I'm not the creator, so I can't sort of throw much shade. That was their decision, and I respect that. But it's so good. So, yeah, watch that
recently,
as well.
I think.
It's insane. A lot of things, and Kaiju especially.
A lot of things coming to such an abrupt end, and I'm like, wait, what do you mean? I'm only 10 chapters behind. This doesn't make sense.
I really don't get it, man. But like, I worry a lot with this stuff, like if it does relate to burnout and that pressure of, you know, weekly, fortnightly, monthly content drops, because there is a lot of work that goes into creating those panels and that art and that story. So you see so many mangakas out there posting on socials saying, yeah, I'm just taking a step away from mental health, or I can't keep doing it, or et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's a lot of pressure that comes with these big franchises. So I hope the mangakas and the creators of things like My Dress Up Darling and Kaiju and what have you, like, I hope they were happy with where it ended, and it ended on their own terms, not something that was forced upon them, whether it be from a publisher or from a health related issue.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I agree with that.
Yeah. Scary stuff. I know we mentioned your social media handle, Onigiri Daddy. Have you got a favorite sort of type of onigiri, like a favorite flavor that you gravitate towards if you do see those beautiful triangle-based rice delicacies sitting in a sort of window somewhere?
You know, it's gonna sound so basic, but it's got to be tuna mayo, right? Like, gotta love like just a tuna mayo onigiri, maybe with like, if they got like furikake on it, I'm all about okay. that.
Yeah, it's a classic, and it's a classic for a reason. I can't remember the name of the Asian supermarket I went into the other day, but it's a monster. It's almost like a Walmart in America, where you've got like little shops within the shop, and there's a little onigiri stand over there. And I went over and copped a few, grabbed the tuna mayo, grabbed a salmon, grabbed a chicken just to be a white boy. And they also had a lobster one. I've never had a lobster onigiri before, but that thing slapped.
Yeah. We don't get them too often here. Like, I think 7-Eleven does them now, but I'm not touching them with a stick. And then we get like pop-up stalls that do them a lot. And like, they'll be like, yeah, we're selling like these many flavors, and we have this many of each. And we go down, and my partner and I will get like a box of them, because it's my name. I have to.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be a sin if not, right?
That's it.
They're so good though. They're such a good tasty treat, and like a quick little snack, or if you get a couple, like a little lunch or dinner on the go. Like, I love the novelty in just eating them and feeling like I'm in an anime for one, because I just can't disconnect Japanese food from anime in my warped brain. But they're also just so damn tasty.
Yeah. Nothing beats Brock's jelly donuts.
I'll tell you what though, some of the cakes in this anime we're about to talk about very shortly, they are drool inducing as well. Like, I'm such a pastry sweet treat boy, and they do the panel to screen conversion justice with this one.
Oh, it looks so good. I'm not a sweet guy. My partner is the sweet tooth. And she's not watching yet. She'll watch when we get a dub, but she'll like look over my shoulder. She's like, "What's that?" And I'm like, "Fragrant flower."
Yes. Hey, and you say, see, you don't like sweets, but you are a sweet guy. So I just wanted to correct you on that, because you're doing yourself a disservice there. But yeah, listeners and viewers, if this is your first time stopping by More Than Hentai, firstly, thank you. But secondly, what took you so goddamn long? There's great content here from all kinds of animes and all kinds of walks of life that is well worth your time. But the way this podcast works is we're going to be doing a deep dive in either the first or the first three episodes of an anime. There will be spoilers, and the main aim of this is to sort of unpack the storytelling, the art, the characters, just to give you guys and girls out there a bit of perspective on, you know, is this anime worth your time? We hope to give you some nice, open, honest, unbiased opinions, and we're going to be tackling the first three episodes of this anime in question, which will hopefully lead to everybody out there being the next super fan for this title, because I love it, minus spoilers. But yeah, the title in focus for this episode of More Than Hentai is a drama romance known as The Fragrant Flower Blooms with Dignity. Said series is written and illustrated by Saka Mikami and originally debuted as a manga in 2021. It currently has 158 chapters available at time of recording. We are recording on the 24th of July at roughly 8:29 p.m. and has gone on to sell over 4.3 million copies. An anime adaptation by Rino Yamazaki and directed by Miyuki Kuroki, with music by Moeki Harada, debuted a few weeks ago in July of 2025. The series is animated by Cloverworks, one of my personal favorite studios, who are behind such titles as My Dress Up Darling, Bocchi the Rock, Rascal Does Not Dream, Spy Family, and Horimiya. The Fragrant Flower can be found on Netflix, pending your region, or if you've got creative ways to find said anime, because it is delayed till September for at least us here in AU and the US and some of the other surrounds. So It's well worth hunting out. I'll just leave it at that. And currently holds a score of 8.8 on My Anime List based on 24,000 unique user reviews, making it the 30th ranked anime overall on the website based on said score. That's and the story crazy. Of The Fragrant Flower Blooms with Dignity is as follows. Chidori Public High and the elite Kikyo Private Academy may sit side by side, but their students live in separate worlds. Kikyo girls loathe the delinquent labeled boys of Chidori. Among them is Rintaro Tsumugi, a misunderstood Chidori student with a scary face but a soft heart who secretly helps at his family's cake shop. When a Kikyo student named Kuroko Wagari sees through his rough exterior and reaches out to befriend him, Rintaro is surprised but hopeful. There's just one problem. Their schools are sworn enemies. Oni, let's start like high-level, spoiler-free, general impressions, overall vibe check before we jump into sort of the structure and the meat and potatoes of this episode. So give me your early vibes, your early feelings after watching the first three episodes of The Fragrant Flower Blooms with Dignity.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like that rivalry from the first scene that we get is so well painted. Like it's just the way that it opens, and then the first scenes we get with like the Kyoko private girl school versus like the Chidori behavioral school, like the two scenes from the two different student sets that's so drastically different that I like it really establishes that animosity very early on.
And it's really sad too. Like there's a moment in the first episode where you see Shohei pick up a handkerchief that one of the girls from the school lost on their way into the schools. And he's like, you know, excuse me, miss, you dropped this. And she looked at him with the most disgusted, hate-filled eyes. And then she's like, you know what? I don't want that anymore. Just throw it in the trash. Like, so you can really see this ingrained, like almost in their DNA hatred that the girls have, like, because you see the Chidori boys, they don't seem to have, and like, you know, they do say they're prim and proper and a bit rude, but like you can see the levels of hate is like worlds apart between the guys and the girls.
Yeah, definitely. Like I think in my notes for the episode, I didn't use hate or like dislike. I used the word disdain, and I was like, that's such a, I think that's really what it came down to for me, is like it's something that is so ingrained in the culture of that school, I think, like that it's just apparent, and like you kind of clue on in that scene because all of his mates are like, oh, kind of course that was gonna happen. Like what do you,
yeah, there was no levels of shock there when
no, they were like, yeah,
yeah, when he copped that blast it. Back. But I love that sort of opposites attract dynamic we have going here. I love this world, the first episode, but you know, in expanding to episode 2 and 3, like I feel the first episode is one of the stronger first episodes I've seen in quite some time because it explains us to the world. It explains the stakes. It introduces our two main characters as well as some ancillary characters, gorgeously animated. And the hook just grabbed me. And we'll talk more about sort of that hook in the next piece again. But overall, like trying to be unbiased super fan of this franchise and this IP, I'm trying to be as neutral and looking at that this is as clear-eyed as possible because I've definitely got, you know, flower-tinted glasses on when I watch this because I love it so much, but it just hit. It hit so well, and right now it's my favorite anime of the season, and I've checked out 30-something so far of the summer season, and this is sitting at the top with a bullet.
Yeah, yeah. Like as I said, this is right up the top for me. I don't know if it is the top. Like we're only 3 episodes into this season, 4 if you were an early starter, but it was, yeah, this is beating a lot of the pack.
Okay, all right, so let's sort of take a step back now from that general impression. Let's talk about that hook and that expectation. So when you sort of first heard about this and you were sort of getting ready to watch it, like what was your initial feelings like when you saw a trailer or a poster or something? Like were you excited? Was there a little bit of skepticism? Like what was the feelings and the vibes going into this one, Oni, before you managed to check out the first episode?
So like I've been seeing promotional stuff for Fragrant Flower for like a fair while. Your excitement for it obviously across most socials have been has been very apparent, and I've been living through you with that one. But really, I think the big thing for me is like every time that you see Wagari or Kakuro's face, it's like always smiling, always bright, and I'm like, man, that is such like, I think I said on the Discord, I was like, the mangaka has such a way of just drawing a face that you cannot help but smile back at.
Especially Kariko, like she is one of the sweetest characters you'll meet in any form of media. Like she is just adorable and has a heart the size of the ocean. And like you said, I think it's perfect that you did mention the smile because, yeah, she's got such an expressive face with her big giant blue eyes. And then you see that big giant white smile and it just lightens up a room. It lightens up a panel, it lightens up a pixel. Like it is so great. And seeing that trailer when it was first announced last year, like it just hit the right notes from the manga I was looking for. And yeah, I felt very confident, not only from the trailer, but then also seeing, oh, Cloverworks are attached to this. They're like,
yeah, that was big.
The romance drama kings and queens. They know what they're doing. So this is going to be great. I was surprised, though, that Netflix managed to sort of hook this one up as an exclusive.
I don't know. Netflix has been scooping things up. Like they, you know, they've got Dandadan, they've got Sakamoto Days, you know, they've really got their fingers in a couple of really, really good puddings at the moment.
Hikaru, they've got that exclusively.
Yeah, that's right.
They've, Leviathan I watched the other day, which was kind of mid, but that was an exclusive.
I think, not to tread on headlines toes, but they released analytics for watching anime and it was like something like 90% of their user bases watches anime. And then
that's
I think That's crazy, which is, you know, that's a huge user base.
Yeah, I remember seeing something like 150 million households around the world have at least watched anime once during their active subscription, which is cool to see. And yeah, we're not in the shadows anymore, fellow otakus and weebs. We are mainstream at the moment. So let's shift into story and world building. So we'll break down, you know, how well the narrative is set up and how well it introduces us to this world. So firstly, like, I thought the world setup was really, really well done. Like I mentioned earlier, like it wastes no time getting to its emotional and narrative core. The story, you know, revolves around, you know, at first the seemingly cold, unreachable and very physically imposing Rintaro. And then the contrast of that with the very wholesome, sweet as candy Kariko, who are, yes, like I mentioned, students at rival schools, where Rintaro, you know, he's at the bottom of the barrel with his class. He's struggling with his grades. Well, we find out later in episode 3, Kariko, she's, you know, number one at the school through diligence and hard work and whatnot. So they really could not be more different. But what starts as sort of that classic opposites attract type setup slowly blooms, minor pun intended, into a very nuanced exploration, I feel, of emotional vulnerability and healing. And it just gets me. And I enjoy that we had that familiar sort of school setting that we've seen 1,000 times, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful sort of negative context here, but I like that it's handled with subtlety. Like we've got modern uniforms, we see rooftop talks, quiet libraries, like nothing out of the ordinary, but it's textured with this really heavy character-driven atmosphere that just grabbed me right from the rip. And there's no real need for sort of explanation dumps about this world because it is something that we've all been familiar with in our own separate ways. And I also feel that it's not about the world itself, but it's about these people navigating it. And I think that's been made pretty clear with our intros to our MCs and just what flows on from there with those first 3 episodes. What about you, man?
Yeah, absolutely. I think like as far as the world setup goes, even from the, you know, the opening scene, you start with like shots of the all-girls school and the choir, and it's backed by their music. And then the first look we get at Rintaro and his mates is like, some other guys are just like asking about him, where is he, what's going on, and he kind of like walks up and intimidates the hell out of him, and it's like it is such a stark comparison between like this prim proper school and this like, you know, like delinquent of, I guess you could say, like that's what they sort of call him. But I think from there it's like nothing is really spoon fed to you like in sort of exposition way. It's all really put forward in a way that's like talked about or kind of shown to you. Like I think episode two is my note here. Yeah, episode two. There's a scene where like Rintaro is like feeling really down because he's like, man, like I'm like I did what other people did to me and just judged Wagari because she was from the all girls school. Like I'm an asshole. Like what am I doing? I think that one was really like, oh man, like he's not just this like intimidating guy. He's got like, you know, he's got like feelings and he doesn't want to be seen as intimidating. He kind of just is, which I think is really cool. Like his character is expanded on heaps. Like I came into it really thinking, oh, you know, like Kakuro Wagari, she's going to be probably like my favorite character of the series just because she's the main MC. But I found myself really like drawn to Rintaro's character arc, even in these early episodes.
I love with this story, both in these first three episodes, and you're not spoiling anything, but you know, the tone from the first three is consistent throughout the manga right through to chapter 158 that dropped today. But like, I like that there is so much self-reflection happening in this world and with these characters, whether they be the MCs or the ancillary cast, because that's what we do, you know, that's what we do in these situations. We overthink, we self-doubt, we self-sabotage. You know, there's a lot of sort of lack of self-belief in all of us, I could pretty well confidently say. So you see Rintaro, who's this giant, like 6 foot something behemoth that is just imposing. And even behind that, like he still is very stumbly and bumbly and almost like a little bit of a child in some aspects, especially when we see him interact with sort of Kariko through these three episodes. So I love that there isn't really any info dumping happening. That exposition, like you mentioned, it is very character driven. Like instead of being told what the characters are like, we see it. Like we see Kariko's outgoing personality masking some pretty deep insecurities that we're made quickly aware of in sort of the first episode, especially. Like we see that aloofness with Rintaro cracking when Kariko begins to sort of disarm him and sort of say, in that first episode, you know, like, I've never once seen you as a scary person, you know, I think you're wonderful. And you see this big giant boy who in that first episode, when his friends, they're such a great, beautiful friendship group as well, both the guys group and the girls group. And you see the boys come up because they can see Rintaro's troubled. And he's like, hey, is it our turn to sort of stand up and help you? And Rintaro's like, nah, like I'm fine, it's all good. And then they reference, you know, oh, you still got walls up. Hey, but you can see Kariko brick by brick start to take those walls down. Like I feel it's romantic storytelling done right. Like it's very much that show don't tell. And I'm totally here for it. Like I feel it's some of the best romance that I'm currently reading / now watching. And yeah, I love it. And I feel the hook strength, especially from first episode, is just really, really strong. Like I enjoy that we're not going to have to wait 12 potential episodes for maybe some form of confession, because Kariko doesn't directly confess her feelings, but you can see in that first episode that she clearly has some type of positive vibe towards Rintaro. He's been very aloof to what's happening, and you know, we made more aware of that down the line. But I love that the hook, as far as this is love, this is Romeo and Juliet, where we've got, you know, conflicting, fighting families.
Montague, yeah, like a Montague and Capulet sort of like.
Yeah, yeah, that's the vibe we got here. Well, absolutely. Not really, because, you know, some of the friends are supportive, and like Rintaro's mum, who's just a saint, is very supportive as well. But like you've got some of that vibe there.
And she's getting mum of the year, I think, for sure. Like as far as anime mums go, she's got mum of the year in my books. I think like definitely with that, as you're saying, with that sort of like sort of directness of this confession, is like she doesn't so much as be like, hey, like I'm into you. It's more of like, the reason I ran away and got nervous is because I was embarrassed. I was flustered, which I actually picked up in the Japanese voice track. She uses the word doki doki, which is the Japanese onomatopoeia for the sound of a beating heart, which can often mean like anxious or nervous or flustered.
That's so good.
So yeah, if you didn't pick that up last time, go back and watch it, and you will definitely hear it that the next time.
Yeah, dude, it's just beautiful. And like, if we shift to sort of, you know, what's at stake here, like on the surface, it's very much, yeah, that teen romance. But I feel underneath, like, I enjoy that it's about learning how to open up, about being seen, and about dealing with that self-worth that I mentioned earlier, like, in the face of expectations and trauma. Like, there's no massive, crazy, big plot twists and reveals. Like, it's a very grounded story about just these characters trying to understand each other. And I feel that simplicity really gives this story and this just overall potential here for greatness a lot more weight.
Yeah, I think it's we're definitely standing on something that's very, for a high school romance, it's very mature in its progression. Like, it's very natural. There's, like, you know, the confession of her saying, like, oh, like, I'm interested, like, you make me nervous, and, like, I'm not really used to that, and, you know. But I think, like, in these first three episodes, it's not been like, you don't feel like their high school is dating. That's like, this is a natural, mature progression of a relationship, which is really good.
Yeah, I think so too. And, like, the last sort of question I wanted to pose to you, Oni, before we sort of jump into maybe talking about characters and chemistry, like, plot or not is the question I want to throw your way. And I say, you know, plot with a bullet, like, it's slow burn romance, yes, but there's strong forward momentum right from the get-go for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, we definitely get started on such, like, a strong first episode. And then even into, like, you know, the second episode and the third episode, everything is very plot forward, which is great.
All right. Well, let's shift into, like I mentioned, characters and chemistry. I would like to know your standouts from a character perspective at the moment, then we can, you know, jump into character designs and the chemistry as well. So who's your early standouts? I know you sort of half alluded to it before, but, like, maybe let's go a little bit deeper from what you said earlier.
Yeah, like, we've definitely got our two MCs, you know. Like, I think the introspectiveness that Rintaro sort of brings forward, especially in episode two, when he's really, like, there's this really coolly animated scene where it's like these, like, silhouette kid faces of, like, all the mean things that were said to him because he looked intimidating. You know, he's always like, he works at a cake shop, like, that doesn't really suit him, like, you know. And then Kakuro is, like, really great, like, just, like, character design, where she's the heart of the series, I think, and it's very visually representative by how, like, adorable she is.
I'm with you. Like, our two MCs, I love them. Kariko, she's my easy standout favorite best girl from this story, and, you know, one of the best girls doing the rounds. Like, I like, you know, she's bold, she's funny, but she's also very painfully honest at times.
Yeah.
But I think it's her sincerity that makes her so captivating and magnetic for me. Like, just the expressions, the heart on her sleeve, seeing her try and find the right words to clearly explain and address some of the questions that Rintaro throws her way, because he can't comprehend why this beautiful, sweet young girl, because he thinks, because, you know, she's really short compared to Rintaro, like I said, who's a beast. At first, he thinks he's almost like, you know, she's like a primary school kid or something. So he can't quite comprehend what's happening. And at the end of the first episode, realizes that, yeah, she goes to Kikyo, the academy right beside Chidori.
That was such a good kicker of a scene where he's like just daydreaming at his desk, and he, like, looks out the window, and she's, like, just across the way, and she gets all happy when she sees him.
And then he freaks and he shuts the, like, closes the blind in a panic. Like, it's so good.
He fooled us. That's such a natural reaction too. Like, oh, I wasn't staring. Like, I think also to mention is, like, Subaru, right at the end of episode three, was introduced, and she's such a cold character, and I look forward to seeing, like, how that character sort of, you know, at this point in time, this looks like one of those, you know, one of these girlfriends that are just gonna kind of get in the way and be like, no, he's not good, you shouldn't be, like, interested in him. But I think, like, if the start of the episode and the way that they've sort of been very, like, character driven, I feel like there's going to be, like, a change with her, which I'm hoping for. Because, yeah, she's got a really cool design. She's got, like, you know, that silver hair. And that's always really cool to see on a character. But I'm also, like, just, like, her cold demeanor, I want to see that sort of, like, warm up as well.
She's one of the best characters in this story. With a bullet, like, she's great. She's a beautiful friend. She grew up with Kariko, that like you see at near the end of episode 3, where she's at home reflecting on a scene that played out beforehand.
Yeah,
and they're like a couple little kiddos, no more than, you know, 3 or 4 years old at the time, and now, you know, so they've been clearly best buddies for many years, and she's very, very protective of Kariko and her exchange, and like because she gets introduced and she's got that silver hair, and I think that silver hair just really emphasizes her coldness and like this ice queen demeanor she gives off, because she's like, Kariko, get out of here. These guys are trash. You know, don't waste your time with these boys. They're nothing but trouble, yada, yada, yada. And she pretty much
that
doesn't
scene
like
was
boys.
Really great, because Rintaro really like kind of stands off and is like, hey, like, no, I spoke to her first. Like I addressed her here at the library. That's why we were talking together, and sort of like, talk down sort of like Subaru in a way, being like, no, no, like don't have a go at her, which was really sweet.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you. But yeah, I love Kariko's my MVP. Rintaro is a proud and deserved sort of 1B to the 1A, but also like Saki, Shohei and Ayato, Rintaro's sort of main friendship circle, they're really great guys, and you'll sort of start to see and learn more about them as the episodes start to release. And then, yeah, Subaru and some of the broader female friendship group, they're great as well. So we're very spoiled with sort of this great duo MC and then the ancillary cast. As far as the character designs, I feel the designs are super clean, super understated, but in my opinion, very gorgeous. Like we mentioned earlier, as far as the mangaka that initially illustrated these characters, that same gorgeousness and that same aesthetic and vibe has been ripped straight from panel to pixel. It's so good. The art and the characters really, really carried across well from Mikami's manga. I think Kariko's bright eyes and her expressiveness certainly carry emotions to a new level for me. And then you see Rintaro, who's sort of got this darker color palette, and he's got a very muted, unreadable face and a lot of like, huh? Anytime, you know, Kariko sort of says something nice and endearing. So he's not showing any expression. He's very guarded, walls up both physically and emotionally, where Kariko, you can see the big giant eyes, the big cheeky smile, and just how excited she is. Like, it feels very much like Kimi no Todoke meets Horimiya in style, where it's, you know, minimal but very impactful for me. What are your vibe checks on the character designs?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with all of that. I also think that, like, that choice of having sort of such a he's not expressionless, but he's very sort of like stoic, I guess, for a lack of a better word here. He's very like in Rintaro, he's very sort of, he doesn't really show what he's feeling too much other than just kind of like a general sense of just like aloofness and sort of like not really caring. But like internally, he's a very like introspective character who has a lot of this sort of like self sort of like doubt or loathing going on. And that's all told through, you know, his thought patterning and his memories. And then you have all the emotion conveyed with Kariko, and it's all like, it's all expressive and bright, and it's in her face, and it's in the way that like even they kind of do the camera work and stuff, and the way that the like the lighting in the scenes will change to like make it seem like a brighter scene. And I think that parallel between the two is like really cool.
I think so too. And I feel that really just goes to, you know, provide us maximum main character appeal, where, you know, Kariko, she's chaos and courage. Rintaro is repression and reluctant charm, I guess say. And together they really make something compelling, which, you know, I cannot get enough of, if you haven't realized already now that we, you know, we're 45 minutes into this so far. Like, I love them. And regarding sort of the chemistry, their dynamic, I think it's fire, man. Like, it's awkward, it's emotionally charged and full of that, you know, he doesn't know how to handle this girl and it's killing him inside moments. And I just love seeing this bond form slowly but quickly at the same time over these first three episodes. It's not done through big gestures, but, you know, through shared silence, mutual understanding, and Kariko's refusal to let him push her away because, yeah, Rintaro, he's got so much self-doubt and so much pain that he's just carrying with him. And like when we talk about favorite scenes and moments later, there's one particular scene like in that first episode again that just broke me in half, because this boy is so damaged and he doesn't see himself the way that, you know, his friends do and his family does, and now Carrico does. He just sees himself as the giant, big, evil man that no one can trust, and he's scary and intimidating and yada yada. So I feel that yin and yang vibe is just, you know, fantastic as far as that chemistry.
Yeah, I think definitely, like, there's so much just raw chemistry between the two. Like, it's evident from, like, even the scene where she, like, runs away from the bakery because she's nervous. It's like, oh, like, you don't react like that over someone who doesn't give you butterflies. And I think that's it's really sweet. And then as he's, you know, you see, I think definitely chemistry wise for Rintaro, it's very very sort of put on the nose when he kind of grabs Shohei by the back of his shirt and he's like, hey, like, cut it out, like, stop having a go at her. Obviously, because in episode two there's that scene where she's waiting outside the front gate of Chidori, and I think, you know, Shohei definitely has a bit of a grudge and he takes that out on her a bit, but then he's really quick to backtrack that. And he's like, oh man, I wish I had a girlfriend here, like, that would wait for me outside the school.
It's so good. And I love that sort of fierce, unquestioned loyalty that the boys and the girls have for one another. Like, you saw, like, yeah, you mentioned, like, Shohei was so quickly to step up and sort of fight for Rintaro. But then when Rintaro's like, whoa, 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 settle down, he's so quick to apologize and realize that he did the wrong thing and this isn't what Rintaro is wanting. Like, it's so good. Like, ride or dies, man. I love it.
That proper apology scene in episode three where he's actually face to face with her again it's so sweet. Like, it's like, oh, like, these aren't delinquent boys. These are good boys that are just kind of bad at school.
Yeah. Yeah. But even like Saku, you know, he's smart as anything, like, you know, wise and constantly helping the boys, like trying to help them with studying. Obviously, they have a really hard time with it and just in one ear out the next sort of with that crew. But like, he's top of the class roughly of the delinquent school. And so, like you said, they're very miscast from an outsider's perspective as far as just, yeah, good for nothing delinquents. But
definitely,
let's sort of shift gears into animation and style. Obviously, we mentioned Cloverworks is the main studio behind that, but let's talk about the art and the fluidity, Oni. I feel the animation, it's subtle and expressive. There's no need for flashy action and overproduced sort of scenes here. Like, every meaningful blink or, you know, shift in posture is loaded with intent from the characters. So that carries more weight to me than, yeah, bright lights and explosions. But then seeing the use of close-ups and still frames to really let those emotions simmer. And there's one particular I think of in episode one when Rintaro sort of blocks that punch and, you know, his head hits the roller door as he sort of protects Carrico from those boys. And there's just a few shots where they emphasize the size difference where you see it's just almost from like the hips down and you see Carrico sort of up on her little tippy toes with her handkerchief trying to sort of dap the blood away from Rintaro. Just really smart framing usage and really smart ways to sort of add more weight and tell story without, like we said earlier, not beating us over the head with text.
Yeah, I think they definitely use like the use of sort of like lighting effects to kind of like focus in as well. Like, whether it be like a big smile or that scene where she, you know, she is cleaning him up after he sort of bangs his head on that roller shutter. It's like, it's always sort of done in a way that will draw your focus to the characters. And, you know, that's not to say that like the background isn't interesting. Everything in this show is drawn or animated beautifully. It's just like they were very smart with how they frame things and how they sort of like set lighting to suit the scene.
Yeah, I think lighting, and I love that you brought that up, like the lighting, it shifts to match the mood. Like, we see mostly, you know, a lot of warm and natural tones. You know, we see that the typical sort of blues and sort of golden hour hues sort of with the classrooms. But then you're seeing some of these emotional scenes, like it does definitely sort of lean into soft pinks and grays. Yeah, it's very shoujo at its core, but it's very pretty. And yeah, I like that it's subtly used instead of like, yeah, big grand gestures and explosions and unnecessaries, I feel. And from an artistic standpoint and an animation standpoint, I feel as far as The standout scene for me, you know, that umbrella sharing scene in the rain, like, yeah, classic trope for sure, but I feel it was just executed really well. Like the subtle body language, the long pauses, the ambient sound of rainfall. Like it feels like I was there in that scene, like almost like I was a silent bystander walking behind them. And it just hits just right. Like it really carries so much emotional weight and such a, you know, subtle payoff just constantly with that little scene.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely agree there. I think there's definitely like a quite a few standout scenes, even episode to episode. But the one that my brain keeps always like coming back to is when Rintaro does drop her off to the train station and she's like, let's eat cake together sometime. And she like gives him that big smile. It's like, man, I melted in my chair. I was like, that is so sweet. Like that's going to give me diabetes. It's really sweet.
Like we're both happily taken, but I can confidently say that I fall in love with this girl constantly just because of how sweet she is. And yeah, that scene definitely embodies that as well. And as far as the direction, like I feel the mood from the director's standpoint, I like that it is quiet and confident. Like director Kuroki, he knows when to pause and when to linger. And there's a lot of respect for those small moments, not just like with the characters. The show doesn't rush, and I really, really enjoy that from a direction-based standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like with Kuroki, he does a lot of he did Darling in the Franxx, which I loved, and had some like really great action-y scenes as well. And then I think that's the last one that I really like properly sat down and watched from him without diving into his catalog too far. But then there's also Suzuki as well there, who's the animation director, and he did a lot of stuff from Rascal. And you can, I feel you can tell, like it's, it does read like that as well.
It feels like they're in the same universe with it some does. Of the art stylings and the way it's framed. And especially like if we're going to talk about, you know, the like, was this done on a budget or is this, you know, crunchy? This is 100% crunchy because I feel just like with Rascal, there's so much life within every scene or location with background characters and movement in the background and people coming and going from work or from school or going to a shop. Like I love the addition of just a busy yet sort of quiet and subdued background as far as just people going about their day, because it just adds that extra polish, like you mentioned, and it just adds so much believability. Like there's very much intent behind every single frame. Like the budget went into this in a big way. Like it's focused more so on emotion and softness, not spectacle. But I also feel that these scenes feel very lived in constantly.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, it is anime, but it feels so real. Like it really feels grounded, which I love.
You and me both. There's so many parallels with this franchise and with Rascal as far as the art style, the storytelling, the pacing, the way they go about things tonally. Like, yeah, I can see why I love them both so much, because I adore Rascal, you adore Rascal, I adore Fragrant Flower, and they're just so many similar beats. And God, I'm obsessed, man. I'm obsessed, but I got to try and remain unbiased. Let's shift into the soundtrack and the voice acting. First and foremost, what did you think of the opening and the ending? Were they bangers for you?
So I definitely think that they're good. They're definitely very good opening and endings. You know, I'll sit through them on my weekly watch. I won't skip them. But considering I watched them 3 or 4 times this week alone, I did end up skipping, you know, the opening, the last watch through, which was only this afternoon. But it was definitely like, it definitely gave a vibe of like, it instantly put you in sort of like a romantic mood. I think like it really gives you sort of like a kind of like sweet opening that feels romantic in a way. Like my note on my notes when I was watching was like, it's really, I said that it gets me ready to watch a romance, which I think is for sure the mood that gets put forward.
I think I'm in complete lockstep with you there. Like, yeah, they're not the greatest opening and ending tracks that I've ever heard in my life, but they're tone setters. I feel because they are a little bit more subdued with the musical delivery, like the art that goes with it is gorgeous and that helps sort of set the mood as well. But like, it's very cozy, it's very wholesome, it's very warm, and like you said, it just gets me in the mood for romance. I think that's the perfect way to describe that. And same goes with the background music. I feel that is very subdued again. You don't really notice it too heavily. Like, it doesn't blow your eardrums out. Like, it's just there to add some additional depth and some additional weight to these scenes. It's not there to sort of pull focus. So I appreciate that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely feel that with both the opening and the ending. Like, it's no Unravel, it's no Firefall season one, but it's definitely, you know, it is good and I won't skip it.
And it's also because the way I'm watching it, it's hard to skip because I'll click it and then a pop-up will happen and then something else will break. So I'm just like, nah, once I get it playing, I'm not touching anything until the episode's done. But anyway, as far as the voice performances go, I feel the VAs for both Kariko and Rintaro were really great. Like, Honoka Inoue is the VA that handles Kariko. She brings heart to the role, a lot of rawness, a lot of honesty, a lot of vulnerability, which I appreciate. And then Rintaro, who's voiced by Yoshinori Nakayama, very restrained, but I feel very layered at the same time.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed their portrayals of our two leads here. Like, I thought it was some excellent casting. And when I've been reading this manga for so long, hearing these voices now on screen, like, it feels like they fit well together.
Yeah, I don't have that reference. I haven't read it yet, but like, even looking at the portraits of them, I'm very much agreeing with, like, they sound like they look, which is, you know, as good as you can say most of the time. But I definitely think, like, specifically Rintaro, I think really puts a lot of emotion in those sort of like introspective scenes that we get with him. So it's I like him a lot.
Yeah, me too. So let's sort of shift the tone a little bit here, and we'll try and tie this back into the brand. Obviously, this podcast is called More Than Hentai, so we're going to talk about fan service. And to be honest, there is no fan service here. Zero panty shots, no boob physics. This ain't Rent a Girlfriend. This is emotional fan service. Smiles, shared glances, umbrella scenes. So I love that. There's no ecchi. You know, there is some light playing with tropes as far as damsel in distress type of vibe, with the potential conflict there with those two guys that were sort of giving Rintaro's crew a little bit of trouble. But then at the same time, that sort of flipped on its head as well, because Kariko stands up to these two idiots. And even though, you know, these are two large young men here saying they're going to sort of cause some trouble and then violently threaten her, she is unwavered in her support and belief in Rintaro, and we'll talk more about that in sort of favorite moments in a second. But yeah, no etchiness. There is some tropes, but I think they're utilized well as far as tying into the usual trappings of typical high school romance and whatnot, but it does twist them with a bit more emotional sincerity. But if we're going to sort of call out this segment, A Fragrant Flower Blooms with Dignity, it is so much more than a hentai. Like, this is more than romance, more than tropes, more than just cute. It's romantic vulnerability in motion. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I'm pretty much on board with all of that. Like, there is sort of no fan service. There's no sort of, like, you know, innuendos or like ecchi sort of like imagery. It's all very clean or very proper or very mature. And I honestly, like, I think it's better for it. Like, it's definitely not missed, you know?
And I think if they forced any of that in here, it would just cheapen everything about what makes this world and these characters so great. So I love that it's grounded, it's not pervy, it's just raw, wholesome, honest, potential love, and I cannot get enough of that. But something else that I could not get enough of is some of our favorite moments that took place in these first three episodes. Let's maybe pinball this, where you give me one of your favorite scenes or moments and I'll give you one, and vice versa, and we'll sort of see what kind of list here we compile.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a couple of that I have as well. Like, I definitely think that in episode one, that, you know, the scene where, you know, the guys from the start of the episode have, you know, cornered Kakarō and is sort of like harassing her a little bit, and are like, you know, what were you doing with Rintaro, you know, like, this, is he your boyfriend, you know? And then Rintaro coming in and sort of like stopping it. But before we even get to that, she's like so hard on defending him, being like, you shouldn't be talking like about people you don't know. Like, he's not like that. You don't know him. Which I think, like, seeing her sort of like stand up for him in that way is so good. Like, it's such a good scene. Definitely think that was like a standout, especially for her character as well. Like, I mean, the first time we're introduced to her, she's running away because she gets, you know, she gets that doki doki, she gets that butterflies, you know. Mm-hmm. So she comes back and she's like standing up to people for him, and it's like, man, that's so sweet.
Yeah, that scene, like, even sort of backtracking from that scene a couple of minutes before that, where Kariko and Rintaro are talking and she tells him, she's like, you know what, I've never once found you scary. I don't know what you're talking about. And then she leaves, says her goodbyes, and then, yeah, gets confronted by those two guys. But even in the face of danger, like, she plants that Rintaro flag and she calls him wonderful and calls them unpleasant. And then, yeah, seeing the guys then about to punch her, which is like, why are these youths in Japan so violent? They're always trying to hit women in all these anime. I don't get it. I hate that trope, but it adds some sort of more weight to scene, what happened definitely. Shortly after that. Yeah, where Rintaro comes in out of nowhere, shields Kariko against this wall, takes the punch, doesn't fight back. The impact sort of splits his head open when he sort of hits the roller door behind. But then the guys realize Rintaro's there. They run off like scared dogs with their tails between their legs again. But then we have this beautiful, raw, real conversation between Rintaro and Kariko here, where Rintaro sort of says, you know, I took that punch as punishment because he just sees that he's so undeserving of like love and true friendship and good things. And man, like, I've rewatched these first three episodes maybe four times now. Like, yeah, I'm fully up to date on the manga. But that scene still just breaks my heart into a million pieces. Just seeing this poor boy just so lost in his high school years, feeling that, you know what, this is all I deserve, to be beaten up. And you sit there and go, man, what happened? But then my heart gets repaired seconds later because Kariko straight away jumps in and she just repairs and rebuilds not only my heart, but starts to rebuild Rintaro's confidence and realization that, no, you're not a bad guy, because she jumps in, gets that handkerchief out, sort of dapping the wound, saying about how great he is and how she's never been scared again and she thinks he's such a nice guy. And it's just so wholesome and so beautiful, yet so painful, all in the span of like a 5-minute window. But yeah, it's probably my favorite scene out of these first three episodes.
Yeah, definitely. I think with the handkerchief thing, it's such a good callback to the start of the episode as well, because obviously, like, you had Shuhei trying to give the handkerchief back to the girls, and they were just like, it's worth nothing now that you've touched it, essentially. And, you know, meanwhile, here's Wagari cleaning up Rintaro's, you know, cut on his head from the roller door.
It's so good. And like you said, that's a great callback too, because I missed that. I think the first time I watched, I cottoned on to that on my fourth watch again this morning. I think I'm like, oh shit, there's a little connected thread and a reference back to that throwback where the girls thought it was just trash and ruined now. So,
yeah, and like, at that point, you don't know she's part of that girls' school yet either. So it's like, it's really laying that seed for that final scene where, you know, she opens that window and there Rintaro is staring back at her, and mm-hmm. she like gets this big smile on her face, and it's like, oh.
It's so good. But something else that's good, like episode one, I really enjoy where we see Rintaro and Kariko interact with each other for the first time in the anime, and he sort of, you know, he's ran home from work to help with the patisserie because they're short on staff, so he's sort of working as his mum's gone, and he goes out to sort of see this one customer that's still there. It's pouring down rain, so it's pretty quiet, and he steps out there, and we see Kariko with her big giant blue eyes, and we see that she smashed down like four pieces of cake and it's just so cute and so wholesome. Seeing Rintaro shocked, where he's like, how can someone so small eat this much? Like, he's like in amazement of this little pint-sized wonder cleaning out all the cake supplies.
100%. Like, we'll go out and she'll be like, I want this dessert. And I'm like, okay. And then she'll do the same thing kind of like later on where, like, you know, she came to apologize for running away. She buys him a cake to say sorry, and then she's just like staring at it the whole time. I'm like,
it's so good.
That is,
and then he's like, do you want this?
That is so Sarah coded. It's not even a joke. Like, I was like, I sent her the scene. I was like, this is you.
I love that. And I typically do gravitate towards food focused characters in media, especially in anime, and seeing Kariko's, her eyes just light up, and she takes so much joy from all these tasty treats. Like, it warms the heart, it's relatable, and it's wholesome. It's one of my favorite things in media, and especially in anime, is someone like eating good food that looks good. Like that cake that Rintaro gets out and then, you know, obviously, yeah, gives it to Kariko later. That's like one of my favorite looking cakes, like simple vanilla base, cream, some strawberries. Yeah. Like, oh my God, I was that hard. I could sort of crack glass. Like, it was ridiculous looking at that slice of cake. It was so good. So good. But then sort of throwing another favorite scene out in that episode 3, we sort of touched on it earlier, but where you see Rintaro and Kariko, yeah, they've had that interaction outside the library where they're both studying. And then we see not only Rintaro's crew come back, but then Subaru comes and we get introduced to her. And the tone and the mood changes immediately when she comes in, like I mentioned, you know, the silver-haired ice queen. But then seeing Rintaro step in and take the fall for Kariko, claiming all the blame was on him as far as why they're talking, like, it just goes to show how good a man and how nice a person Rintaro is. And then obviously, yeah, Kariko does the apology to everybody after that. And then even like tells Subaru, hey, you too, Subaru, you owe him an apology as well. But then Subaru's like, you know, stick it up your backside, I'm out of here. But I just love the level of respect and care and adoration that not only our two leads have one another already, but that is quickly starting to develop and sort of flow across the friend base as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's so much respect like for people's friends in this. Like, even though this is a romance, you've obviously got our, you know, you got our protagonists, but we also have like their supporting characters, probably are the most deserving of the word supporting characters that I've seen in quite some time.
I agree. That's perfectly said, man. That's perfectly said, and I think it nails it. Have you got any other scenes you wanted to highlight as far as favorite moments?
I have one other that wasn't mentioned, and it's the scene with Rintaro and his mom, just like as he's like having a bit of a sulk, being like, I'm an idiot, like, this is how could I think like that? And she's just like, you know, it's fine. Like, people have these thoughts, and it, you know, you just got to be better now. And she's like really sort of like, you know, she knows what her son's like, and she knows she can't like baby him, but she's supporting him and she's there. And that's, you know, it's really cool to see that relationship as a bit of a focus, because parents aren't common in anime that much. You know, it's always, especially these high school ones, you really focus on like them and their friends, and families away on business or families away on a holiday, you know, and it's very rare to see like, oh no, someone's mom is actually present and someone's mom is actually mothering.
She's so good. And like her and Rintaro's father, like, you learn more about them as this season goes on. But like in the most recent sort of run, like I mentioned, we're at chapter 158, I think around 150-ish or so, we get sort of like a little 4-episode arc where we sort of get the backstory of Kyoko, who's Rintaro's mother, and how she met his father and how they came to be. You get some excellent storytelling as far as how they met in high school in those chapters specifically, but you just see how they parent and how they help lift Rintaro up in their own ways. Like, it is beautiful. And like you said, it's such a rarity in anime and manga where, yeah, mostly, like you said, the families are absent. Outside of maybe you see a sibling, like an awkward, you know, brother-sister type of vibe, but you don't really see the mothers and the fathers around, but they are present in this series. And even like Kariko's family as well. Like, it's so great, the broader cast that we meet. Like, you even meet like, you know, the other friendship groups, families and stuff like that. Like, yeah, there's so much care given to world building in this.
I really look forward to that, I think, because I like, especially with Kariko, you said like her family gets introduced and there's like stuff about them and they're like a fleshed out part of the story. It's not just like, because she mentioned like, oh, you know, like I really asked my dad, I really wanted to go to this school. And now that I'm on a scholarship, I have to be top of my class. And so it's like, oh, so like she's not one of these rich girls that can just afford to go to this school. Something is obviously there. And I'm really excited to see that sort of explored and talked about in the series as it moves forward.
They've got such beautiful relationships with their families. Like, you'll see, I don't know if they'll get to it in this first season of Fragrant Flower, but like, as to why, you know, Rintaro's got his hair dyed blonde. And there's some really nice stuff in relation to that with his mom, Kyoko, because obviously she's got the blonde hair as well. Yeah. And God, it just, I'm thinking about it now, like my heart is just starting to overflow thinking about some of these scenes translate to screen, because it's so good, man. So good.
Yeah, I look forward to either reading it when I catch up or watching it when it comes out. But either way, like, I'm going to be there for it. It's slowly becoming a very, very built up world that I really like. Like, it's all there, you know?
That makes me so happy to hear. So let's shift into the last couple of sort of categories and segments of the potty here. So let's talk about these first three episodes. Like, let's talk about the impact and the watchability. Like, if we wanted to sort of scale it, like, do you feel, is this binge worthy? Does it need to improve anything? Did it leave you wanting more? Like, what was your vibe checks after watching not only episode one, but episode one, two, and three now, Ani?
Oh yeah, like, absolutely wanting more in the sense that, like, I want to consume it all right now. Not wanting more as in it was lacking. Like, it was like everything was there, everything was great, but I wanted more of it. Like, I was so into it. I think also there's not really much that I think needs improving. Like, the pacing is good, the character development is good, the art is good. Like, they're all really well done, and it creates such like a great anime. I think, you know, definitely to put it into your words, it's sitting at my amaze tier right now.
Yes.
And yes. And I don't think it's dropping anytime soon.
That makes me feel very, very happy. So yeah, if you had to sort of rate the hook from the first three episodes based off this other very scientific scale, would you say Not Tonight, Senpai, give it three more episodes, or instant watch? I think I already know probably where you're going
to
go.
Instant watch for sure. Instant watch is definitely the way to go there.
Yeah. And I feel like, as far as the hook, like, if that first episode doesn't get you, you have no heart, you're not a human, you have no feelings, no emotions, go to the doctors and get yourself checked out, because I don't know how you couldn't leave that first episode viewing without feeling something and wanting to know what the heck happens, because it's an awesome hook where you see, yeah, Rintaro with the panic curtain close, yeah, and contrast with, you know, Kariko's giant eyes opening up, realizing that their worlds have gotten a whole lot closer in that moment. Like, it is perfect.
Yeah, it's so good. Like, I don't know what they plan to do on Netflix, but if they drop it all in one go and you don't sit down and just chew through the whole season in an afternoon, it's like, man, like, how did you put that down?
Yeah, I'm curious about that too, because obviously they're doing the episodic drop on some of the Eastern Netflix websites that's currently sort of airing it. But as far as, yeah, the Western audience, I'm wondering if they're gonna maybe just do it all in one fell swoop, because by then we're going to be transitioning into the next season.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's going to be an awkward crossover either way if they're doing it. Like, I'd be sad because I want it all at once, but like, will it generate more viewers and more interest if it is a weekly drop? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is there, man, because it's a weird timing where they're going to drop it in the back third of the summer season.
Yeah, definitely.
Who knows? Who knows? All right, so let's jump into some final wrap-up questions. First, I wanted to say, like, if you're still on the fence about The Fragrant Flower Blooms with Dignity, the most common compared anime on my anime list are as follows: The Angel Next Door Spoils Me Rotten, Fruits Basket, My Love Story, Horimiya, and Skip and Loafer. Five bangers. I've watched all of them front to back. I adore all of them. I'm looking forward to future seasons of some of those as well. So yeah, if you love that, you're going to definitely love this. And if you don't love this, like I said, you've got some issues, you need to probably go seek help. But Ani, as the cherry blossoms begin to fall, so shall your final parting words. But before you do, please know that this segment is presented by our friends over at Iced Tea Aesthetics, where anime meets streetwear. Be sure to use code SakuraSociety5. That is number 5 at checkout to save yourself some dollars on your order. Ani, what are your final thoughts, and what would you – or actually, you already scored it as far as – yeah, but I'm going to ask you again. But what are your final thoughts, and what would you score using the Senpai scale of bad, mid, good, great animes?
Yeah, so this is definitely an amaze anime. Like, yes, it's sitting so high up there that, like, I'm going to watch it every episode that comes out, and then I'm going to watch it when it comes out on Netflix later this year in September.
I feel, again, trying to sort of have recency bias aside, I feel this is going to quickly end up in my top 10 favorite anime of all time, because I know where the story's going if they can maintain this level of consistency from a storytelling perspective, pacing perspective, animation perspective. I feel that we're going to have something special here. The Fragrant Flower blooms with dignity. It's perfect and real and wholesome and honest. And I just love everything about this world, if you couldn't already understand. My eyes were teary constantly throughout all three episodes because it just hits for me. Like, I feel this anime and the manga, like, I know it wasn't, but I feel that this is another like IP that was just made for me specifically because it just checks every single box and it just makes me feel all the feels that I want all the time. Like I said, it's already one of my favorite reads, but I feel when this is all said and done, this could become one of my favorite watches. So yeah, hat tip, amazed here for me. Can't say enough good things about The Fragrant Flower Blooms with Dignity. It's so good, Oni.
Oh, I can't get enough. I literally will wait up on Saturday night to watch it.
That really warms my heart. And something else that I can't get enough of, man, is you on the microphone podcasting with me. It does not feel like this is your first ever podcast.
I really appreciate that. That means so much. Like, I honestly, I was genuinely really nervous coming in. I was like, because like I listen back to my voice and like messages and stuff. And I'm like, man, I don't vibe with it, but I know that's a very personal thing. Like that could just be me. That could be, you know, like when I started dating my partner, she loved calling all night long and falling asleep on the phone. It's all like, I voice can't be that bad. So I definitely think that like, definitely saying that, you know, if it feels like this isn't my first time recording, I appreciate that, you know?
No, dude, you made it flow and feel very easy and like you've done this many, many times before. And like regarding the voice thing, you got a great voice. I feel the same about mine personally. Like I hate listening back to my voice with edits and stuff. It like feels like nails on a chalkboard. So you aren't alone in that feeling, even though it's a wrong feeling to be feeling. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. I love your voice. I wouldn't have listened to, you know, however many hundred hours of between hentai and headlines I've listened to it of.
I'm going to get that on like my gravestone when it's all said and done. I love your voice. And then it'll be like, dash Oni. That's, you know, I can't think I can get many, many better compliments than that. But dude, thank you so much for stopping on by. Thank you so much for working around my schedule and having to sort of shift recording times here and there. I really appreciate that. But dude, anything you wanted to mention or shout out, like I did briefly touch on in the opening, you are starting to dabble with a bit of Twitch streaming. You want to shout out where people can find you on there, on the socials.
Yeah.
The floor is yours to say and talk about whatever you like here, my friend.
So yeah, I occasionally jump on the Twitch, give it a bit of a stream. I am trying to be more regular with it. It is just, I work a full-time job and then I come home. I've got a fiance and I've got a, you know, I got a 3-year-old cat, which is a lot more hassle than it needs to be. But it's definitely fun. You can check me out on Onigiri Daddy everywhere that matters. Twitch, Discord, Twitter, wherever you like.
Hell yeah. Do yourselves a favor. All the links to Oni stuff will be in the show notes there. So yeah, hunt him down, give him a follow. He's a damn good man with damn good opinions and he's well worth your time. So be sure to follow him and pay it forward however you can. Same goes with podcasts. Obviously, rate, review, subscribe this podcast on your podcast player of choice. Sadly, the algorithm only accepts 5-star reviews these days. Didn't make the rules, but you just got to adhere to that. But once you're done doing that for More Than Hentai, make sure you do that for all the other podcasts you listen to on the regular. It takes no time. It costs you no money. And it means the world for little podcasters like myself because it keeps us relevant, gets us into the charts and what have you. And like I said, it takes no time. It's just a good vibe. So pay it forward where you can. Something else I'd like to request humbly, if I can, just set up a fresh new YouTube just to wholly and solely focus on More Than Hentai. You can go to youtube.com/More Than Hentai. I don't know if there's the at symbol after that / these days on YouTube, but just sort of search that on there, dropping a lot of not only the podcast long form content, but starting to do a lot of more short form content. It's a little bit new for me to do more sort of video based stuff and I'm having a bit of fun with it. So if you can, chuck a follow on there as well as at More Than Senpai on the socials, preferably Instagram, Threads, and TikTok is where I'm doing most of my damage. That would mean the world to me. And a big thank you and virtual hug goes out to our fantastic producers keeping the lights on in the studio here as well as the emotional lights on in this big old heart. But Oni, thank you so much for stopping on by, man. Hopefully this isn't the last time, whether we cross microphones or you might do something down there in the future yourself, because this has been a blast.
I appreciate that a lot. Thanks, Brendan. Definitely, if there's an opportunity to come back, if there's a reason to come back, I'm always more than happy. I sat on that that application for so long, being like, oh, I don't really do anything online to like push myself out there. I won't apply. And then you hit me up in the Instagram being like, when are you doing an episode? And I'm like, oh shit, like I got to do one.
Yep. I just, like I've said, I just want to talk to good people about good anime and have a good time. And you check that first box. And I think we've checked the second and third boxes tonight with this podcast.
Absolutely. So,
yeah, appreciate you. And we'll definitely get you back on. Maybe you can try and find a recommendation to throw our way that we can unpack.
Oh, like a reverse hentai. Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, I don't know if you need specific consent to make that happen, but I'm open to it. So let's see.
Oh, no,
but,
I meant come back and recommend you one. I was like, oh.
That too. But whether you're anime be subbed, dubbed, or see it to come, enjoy yourself, and much love to all the gorgeous waifus and husbandos out there. Goodbye.